Global supply chain management, so the key drivers which are shaping up the global sourcing are the political influences. So, you know, it could be political influences, could be the taxation or, you know, even whether the country is friendly or not. You know that there are some penal custom duties, you know, for import from certain countries, the non-friendly countries. At the same time, there could be a bilateral trade agreement or a free trade agreement with certain countries where you can source the material at concessional or zero custom duty. So this is the political influence. Infrastructure in respective geographies. So, you know, you find that certain kind of material only can come from certain parts of the world because of the availability of the raw material, etc. Currency. You may have favorable impact of currencies in certain countries. Climate changes and shifts and culture. So these are some of the drivers which you know, shape the global sourcing. When we say culture, etc., you find that take the example of Japan or take the example of Taiwan. I mean, they have certain key inherent advantages. So when it comes to, let's say, electronic components, etc., the natural choice would be, you know, countries like China or Taiwan, who have the capability to supply this material. So global supply chain management, and what are the key features? So it promotes procurement of nearshore countries as a part of global sourcing strategy. So many times it so happens that you may face certain difficulties when you are sourcing from countries which are far off. Your lead times are higher. As we said, that when you are doing a global sourcing, the most common form of transportation is by sea. And when you are getting material by sea, then your lead times are slightly on the higher side. So you are always trying to get the material from nearshore countries. It basically reduces your transportation cost, it reduces your lead times and your replenishment times. It tries to do a trade-off between low-cost procurement vis-a-vis investment in inventory and increased transportation costs. So what we talked about, you know, if you have a lower cost, let's say when you get a material from Latin America, but the lead time, I mean, typically Latin America has a transit time, ocean transit time of 40 days. Plus, you know, the time it takes to arrange a shipment will be another 10 days. You can add to this. So practically, you know, it takes about 2 months to get the material. So while the material may be cheaper, right, but you are having a transit time or a lead time of almost 2 months, which means you will be required to hold higher inventories, and there are more chances of the material getting delayed, etc. Also, you are at a higher risk because of any natural calamities, etc., of the shipment getting delayed. It could be political unrest or whatever. So sometimes you are choosing a solution which is more cost effective. So you are weighing the investment in inventory vis-a-vis the overall cost. So we are talking at the price of the product, the transportation cost, etc. Like I even said that sometimes you prefer to buy material from Asia because we have this bilateral trade agreement, you know, with some of the Asian countries, and it makes sense to get the material from Asia rather than getting it from Europe and let's say Americas. It endeavors to move beyond just the cost advantage. So we are not just looking here at the cost, we are also looking at the overall effectiveness and efficiency that we can achieve in terms of your replenishment time, your transit times, the kind of goods in transit, which is again an inventory on your account. So you look at the complete picture and you are looking at the total cost of procurement. So it requires a setup of local procurement office at respective geographies. Yes, in some cases, for certain kind of material, you may have to put a local procurement office, which actually will be interacting with various supplier or manufacturer, or if it's a natural product, the people who grow the raw material. So, but generally, if you look at the global supply chain, I have never come across material where we have had to have a local office for procurement purpose. Yes, we do have some sourcing centers, which are the existing establishment which facilitate. So they do the negotiation, etc., for you. Since they are doing it locally, they are closer to the market, and they have certain benefit and some advantages. So, but in yes, in some cases, when you're buying certain minerals or some special products in very large volumes, you may require to set up a local procurement office. It needs to manage extraterritorial regulations. And again, this is very important because the regulations vary from country to country. Typical example, there are some South Asian countries where we are procuring the material. Now, these chemicals are typically classified as hazardous material. So just to give you an example, you cannot transport this material as a LCL cargo. You either have to transport it as a FCL cargo, or you have to transport it by air. Now you can imagine, if I have requirement of 100 kg, question is, would I like to bring 100 kg as a full container load, or even I would like to bring it by air, because it's a dangerous goods or a hazardous material, the effort also will be very prohibitive. So you need to look at a lot of regulations, because there are government regulations, there are industry regulations, there could be certain tax regulations, etc. So these have to be taken care of. Even there are some countries where you cannot use plastics, etc. If you're using like wooden pallets, they have to be heat treated, else your consignment will be quarantined in the country to which you are exporting it. So the extraterritorial regulations are very important, and one must understand this when you are involved with a global supply chain. It requires category management. So category management will typically be, you know, like a certain class of materials. So when we take the example of automobiles, electronics could be one, maybe the fuel management system or the fuel injectors, etc., could be another, the tires and the rubber components could be another area, or the plastic components like the dashboard and the side panels, etc. So these are various categories. In chemical industry, we have categories like, you know, you have some polymers, or you have certain pigments, or you have certain specialty kind of chemicals. So then these categories are managed by individual category managers who specialize in that subject. It is also subject to global risk. So we talked about the risk, natural calamities, there can be any political unrest. So in global supply chain, one must even factor these things. So you always need to have certain fallback. We have also seen that in Japan, when there was a tsunami, now a lot of these automobile companies, they used to source certain key elements or components from the parent company in Japan. And when this tsunami occurred, at the time, the supply of this component suddenly stopped. And now there is a move. They are also trying to see that some of these components are made or manufactured at alternate sites to avoid this kind of a risk in future. It uses advanced demand planning and forecasting methods. So when we see that global sourcing also has a challenge of high lead times. So you need to plan your materials 60 to 90 days in advance. And you also run the risk, because suppose you have forecasted a certain demand and the actual demand is higher or lower, then that's certainly going to jeopardize your operations. So you need, you know, advanced demand planning, forecasting methods. You also require higher inventories and certain, you know, fallback. So even in an emergency, you may have to afford some of the components. So you need to take care of this. It involves engagement of global sourcing representatives. So like we said, you know, that we have the sourcing centers where if a particular material in very large volumes is coming from a particular country, then we have our representative. Since I belong to a multinational organization which already has operations in about 25 countries, so our existing organization acts as a global sourcing representative in that country. It requires significant change in the structure of the purchasing function. So, you know, when you are buying the material locally, your structures are different. When you are buying it, globally, then your structure also changes. The kind of people, because there are various other impacts. You have the currency impact. You also need to sometimes hedge the currency. Sometimes there is a natural hedge. So suppose I'm importing a raw material from, let's say, USA in US dollars, and I'm selling the finished product also to the US, I have a natural hedge. So suppose the dollar becomes more costly against the rupee, then I could be paying higher for the raw material or the component, but at the same time, it'll also fetch me a better value when I export it in dollar terms. So, but you need to look at all these aspects. So global supply chain also requires more qualified, more specialized people who understand the risks and the various factors, you know, involved in the global supply chain. So now let's look at the best practices for improving supply chain planning accuracy. So including supply network partners in the planning activities. And we will be actually covering this in more details in the subsequent chapters. But it means that you need to have a collaboration with your supplier and with your distribution partners or your distributors, etc. And you can improve the accuracy and the effectiveness of the entire supply chain by having this collaboration. Enabling collaboration through a web-based portal that provides connectivity, process integration, and event management. So how you do that is you have a total transparency in terms of the inventory that you have. The supplier on his part has a total transparency in terms of the inventory that he's holding, what is in process. So he is aware what is the kind of a plan or a forecast that you have, what he needs to gear up, and he will proactively then manage the stocks at his end. So this is as far as the web-based collaboration portal that we are talking about. The portal is basically the tool. The important thing here is the collaboration, ensuring the accuracy and currency of all data that is input in the supply chain plan. So obviously, I mean, like they say, garbage in, garbage out. So how accurate is your data? If your data is very accurate, then your supply chain is bound to be very, very successful. We took the example and we even said that suppose you know for sure that you require 100 engines per day, then there is no guesswork there. I mean, you can deliver the 100 engines every day and it'll meet your requirement. So higher the accuracy, higher is the you can say efficacy and efficiency of your supply chain. Determining the optimal frequency for conducting and refreshing the supply chain plans. So it could vary from organization to organization depending upon the products, etc. So if there is a company, let's say, which is making mobile phones, the frequency for changing of the plan or the refreshing of the plan may not be that very frequent. But if you look at a chemical manufacturing unit, like typically my organization, we have something like 700 products. Now 700 products being made from two plants, so you can imagine what is the kind of a complexity. So here the frequency for refreshing the supply chain plan will be almost daily, because you have some cases, you know, where some raw material is inadequate, and you may have to, you know, push the production plan behind, or there is an urgency, or there is a sudden surge in demand, and you need to bring forward the production of a certain product. So the frequency would depend upon the nature of the product, nature of the business, and also, you know, the customer requirements, etc. Managing the supply chain disruptions. So the de-risking process will have the following steps. So development of a risk assessment and a management model. We looked at various kind of risks. So, you know, if you're getting the material from nearby, in automobile, again, I come to the same example, you have the ancillaries which are, you know, within a very small radius. The kind of a risk may be much lower. The only risk is in case of any major mishap with the supplier or so. But if you're getting the material, you know, from a place which is say about 1,000 kilometers away within the country, you have the risk of, you know, things like earthquake, political unrest, floods, or whatever, I mean, you name it, and your operations can be disrupted. So even, you know, when you are looking at the risk assessment, you are not only looking at this kind of natural or man-made calamities, but also the risk of like currency. So if you're bringing some material which is imported, inflation of the forex can also be a major risk, because if you have entered into a contract, there are certain industries when it's a B2B kind of a business, you are getting into a contract or an agreement for supply at a fixed price for a certain period of time. It could be like 1 quarter, or it could be 6 months. So there, this kind of risks also can affect the business. Drawing up a business continuity plan. So naturally, you need to have a fallback plan. If you are dependent on a supplier, a vendor who is far off, maybe you will have to have other standby vendors from whom you can source the material in the case of a calamity. Otherwise, you know, like we talked about the tsunami, etc., it can result in interruption or stoppage of the operations. Cultivating an alternate sourcing strategy. So you need to have a certain alternate sourcing strategy. Even you may have stocks lying in other countries or other plants, other sites. You need to have the contingency plan where you can bring this material to ensure continuity. Improving the demand planning. So we talked about, you know, the global sourcing where the lead times are high, and you need to have this very sophisticated demand planning to take care of extremely long lead times. And we talked about lead times as high as 60 to 90 days. So imagine almost 3 months ahead of your consumption, you need to plan your procurement. Creating backup plans for transportation delays and gridlocks. So, you know, India, it's very, very common to have gridlock, the traffic jams, etc. So sometimes even if the supplies are coming from a few kilometers away, there can be delays. We know that there are some metro cities in India where, a short distance of 3 or 4 kilometers can take you maybe 2 hours to travel. So you need to have a backup plan, and the backup plan could be either in terms of, alternate supplier, or maintaining certain minimum stock levels, etc., what we call as the safety stock, and determining the right level of inventory. So again, as we said, you know, the right level of inventory would depend upon the variability in your demand. So higher the variability, higher the inventory level. Number two is your lead times. That means higher the lead time, you will have higher inventories. The replenishment time, for example, if you still operate with the traditional model where you have to release the purchase requisition and then the purchase order is released, you need to take all those time into consideration. So you need to determine the right level of inventory to make sure that any variation in the system, the operations are not affected. So what are the obstacles to the supply chain integration? So silo mentality. Now you have organizations where there are people, they have been there for very long and they feel that it is their fiefdom. They are like the king, and they don't want anybody interfering. And as we said, that the integrated supply chain is, it has to operate like a symphony. It has to operate like a single entity. There has to be a coordination, there has to be a communication. So if you have this kind of a silo mentality, then your integrated supply chain will face problems. Organizational boundaries. So many a times, when you are dealing with different countries, you have the same organization affiliates located in another country or even sometimes within the same country. But if your KPIs or key result areas are such that each entity, each affiliate will try to optimize their own operations, then too you will have obstacles to the supply chain integration. Lack of supply chain visibility. If you do not have a clear visibility of the supply chain and the risk assessment, then your supply chain integration is likely to fail. Lack of trust. If people start questioning, if the supplier is not sure that if he makes the material as per the forecast he has received and the material will be taken by the company. So this is the kind of a lack of trust, and this kind of thing can come from experience. So let's say in the past they have believed the forecast, they have made some material ready, but now they are holding the inventory and your company is not calling for the material, is not giving the call off. So this kind of a thing also will hamper the integration. Lack of knowledge. So if you do not have a proper competence to understand the entire supply chain and how the linkages should work, then you could end up making mistakes. I remember one particular case where we used to import material from the affiliate, and the lead time was typically about 60 to 70 days. We found that every month we used to have stockouts of a couple of products, and because of which we were losing the business. So when we looked into the person who was doing the planning for the imports, he had a beautiful worksheet, and he used to fill in the figures, the demand, the forecast, etc., and then decide how much to order. And we found that there were certain lacunas, like he was not considering the consumption during the period when the replenishment happens, and because of which we were actually under forecasting, under ordering the material, and continuously we were facing these issues of stockout, etc. So having that visibility and having the right knowledge is important to ensure that the supply chain integration works correctly. So in summary, supply chain management is important part of every organization, whether small or large. So unless you are running a vada pav shop or a very, very small establishment, let me tell you, even a Udupi restaurant will need to have a good supply chain. It may not be that well organized, may not have a hierarchy, but the number of ingredients that they handle, and they do that very effectively, very efficiently, because they do not have so much space that they can stockpile material for a month or so. So they will be buying only what they require for the short term, and they will be managing it very, very effectively. And they also have a very clear idea of which time of the day, which is the kind of a dish which will be in demand, what is the kind of preference that people have, and accordingly they will be planning it. Modern supply chain management encompasses the strategic alignment of end-to-end business processes to realize the market and economic value, as well as giving the firm a competitive advantage over the business rivals. And we have seen this, that you can have a USP in the market, you can offer a unique value to the customers if you have a very efficient supply chain management in your organization. With an effective supply chain management, organization can diagnose problems and disruptions correctly. SCM plays an important role in moving items quickly and efficiently to destination. Very nice example I'll give you. When we started using our MRP system, and every time we used to face any stock out or any problems, or there was a buildup of stocks beyond the regular levels, we used to actually go to the root cause, and then we used to find the problem, which was in the way, you know, the replenishment policies were defined, or the kind of lot sizes which were being and all these things, because we operate in a ERP environment, these policies are defined in the ERP, and we could actually go and pinpoint and make the corrections. So every stock out or every incident, we used to actually go and see, okay, there will be some instances like you have a sudden surge in demand which was unforeseen. Let us say there is a competition supplying a similar product. The competition has had an accident because of which the production had to be stopped, and there is a sudden surge in demand. So this kind of a thing is unforeseen, but for the regular business, whenever there was any disruption, we were able to find a problem within the system and correct it. And over a period of time, we were able to streamline our systems to such an extent that we did not have many disruptions. So with the emergence of competition in current market scenario, an efficient supply chain can give a business the edge that it needs. Ideal example, again, I give is Dell. Dell was, they had a strategy that they will make to order. So while most other companies used to make to stock, they will make the standard configuration. They will have some 8 or 10 standard configuration, which they will make and keep it in stock. And as the models are sold, they would keep on replenishing them and making certain product upgradations and changes, etc. Dell had this philosophy that they will make to order. So that means, and another strategy they had was they targeted the corporate market or the corporate segment. So all the major corporations used to buy the Dell machines, and they were extremely competitive because they never made the machines and kept them in the inventory. They never carried any inventory. So you can imagine they worked with a very low working capital. The profitability was very high. They would get the component that they required when they required. They would assemble the machine and then deliver it in the shortest possible time. So this is the kind of a edge that supply chain can give you. Thank you. So we come to the end of this chapter.